Sixes lock all windows and doors. Tom McGinnis, if my math is right, my friend, 29th season as the radio voice of the 76ers. By the way, no better call than he's way too good when Allen Iverson steps over Tyronn Lue, one of the best storytellers that I know, the winner of the Bill Campbell Award given out by the Philadelphia Sports Writers Association, married to the beautiful Robin. Two equally beautiful kids, Tom McGinnis. Welcome to Fresh 24.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you having me.
Knowing the team history as I do, I think I could safely say that you, my friend, have broadcast, and I'm going to go back to Syracuse. Why not? You broadcast more games in franchise history than anyone.
Wow, that's cool. You're probably right. Just because of you guys missed some games with the national broadcasts over the years, and then the playoff games, and I don't know if those are counted or not, but boy, they should be. They're the most important games, and it's easy to go back and look when you count the series and whatnot, and that's well over 100. So it's been a joy the entire time. I remember when we spoke when I was leaving Cleveland, when you know you called me to welcome me and congratulate me, and you know that feels like it was 2 weeks ago.
Eons.
So I really I've never taken it for granted. For me, it was like winning the lottery to be an NBA announcer. And as we sit here today, you know, we're kind of all reveling about this performance by Joel Embiid, one of the great players in franchise history. And those types of events make it even more special.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to mention Embiid 70, of course, the franchise record for points now in a game. I'm old enough to remember Wilt scoring a 68, but that's a story for another time. When you sense a big moment coming as a broadcaster, put us in your shoes and tell us what it's like.
Well, one thing that I'll say, and this is not about me, because so much of this is about our fans. You know, like if you remember Wilt 68, you remember that as a fan, right, Mark? Like you grew up watching this iconic franchise. And, you know, as he was shooting a foul shot for 60, you know where we sit, we're amongst the fans. And they all had it's today, so they all had their cameras up, you know, and which is that punctuates a big moment anymore. I remember last year when LeBron got the record, they showed like a big wide shot of James doing that fadeaway, and everybody had their cameras up, and they showed like when Kareem made a shot against Utah, no one had their cameras up.
Right.
So the fans totally recognize it. And that was so cool. And again, on the Jumbotron, they list a player and what his points are. So it's, you know, there's up-to-date stats. They were totally in line. But you can see it, you know, and again, like reflecting back on your experience, like we're looking at that stat monitor, and as he's making it, you're, oh my gosh, he had 34 points at halftime. And as Coach Nick Nurse said post-game, you know, he had an and-one situation early in the third quarter. So now he's up to 37, and that's when it struck the coach that, oh, by the way, this might be a big number and a special night. So you do. That's exactly right. You want to match the moment. And at the same time, it's a scoring thing. You know, it's not the Sixers winning the championship. And even Joel, after the game, punctuated with, it's great, but something along the lines of what matters most is winning it all. So, but no doubt about it. I mean, even the, like by way of example, these are little subsets. These are special moments along the way. These are why we are fans. Games like Embiid scoring 70 points. The Sixers versus Denver just a few days ago, and they're about to go play them again. These are matchups that don't come along, you know, just on a routine Monday night in January. And then the Spurs game for the Sixers was a big game because it's the first time we'd seen Victor Wembanyama. And then as it turned out, and he was really great, as good as advertised, Joel stole the show. Like, oh, wait, oh, this is my court. this is my night. So it was cool. But as an announcer, you can feel it, you can sense it. And that, again, that goes back to the privilege of being in the seat and being able to call such moments.
I felt fortunate to be in my seat. You obviously feel fortunate to be in yours, but fans may not realize you were broadcasting hockey in Cleveland right before you got the Sixers job. Explain your career arc and why you ended up doing hockey for a year or two.
Well, as you know, I did the CBA, which at the time was the G League of the NBA. It was the official development league of the NBA, the connection between the CBA, the Continental Basketball Association, and the NBA wasn't as strong as it is today, where it's like almost every single team has its own G League or development team. But again, it was pro basketball, the same rules. It was the referee development program. And I'd done that for 4 years. And at a certain point, I felt, that was great experience. That on my resume, that ability to call those games and me developing my play-by-play skills allowed me to get this job in large part. So, but the point is, after having done that for 4 years, I realized, you know, you don't want to be the dean of minor league announcers. I don't know if that's a goal, right? So I needed to move on. And I had started my career in Charleston, South Carolina as a television broadcaster, like the weekend anchor, the reporter guy. And I went back there. They had just started a hockey team, a minor league, very low, East Coast Hockey League, first year they ever had it. And it was a sensation because Charleston, South Carolina had never had professional ice hockey. And it was a hoot. I mean, they averaged over 9,000 fans a game. Mm. And from there, you know, you wanted to, okay. So then I went to Cleveland, which was at the time the 12th largest market in the country. And I went there, Zoo, because it was in the same building as the Cavaliers. So I went there to call the hockey and grow and go to a bigger market, but knowing the same time I was going to kind of be brushing shoulders in, you know, what is now the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, at the time Gund Arena. And that plan ended up working out to where I did some minor things for the Cavaliers, applied for a job in the television realm that they had available, didn't get it. And one of their executives moved to Philadelphia to run the Sixers because the Sixers were moving into, at the time, the first Union Center. And with all the club boxes and suites and the amenities for the fans, they'd never, a lot of those things the Spectrum didn't have. And this guy's name was Tom Chestnut. And he'd just come from Cleveland. And through my connection with the Cavaliers, Dave Dombrowski, we were able to connect with Tom Chestnut. And I got an interview. And again, that minor league experience and 10 years of broadcasting and a young guy who loved the NBA. I mean, I think they could see that, wow, this guy's gung ho. And, you know, it's literally like, it's the resume, the experience, the ability, but luck and opportunity. And that's what I think people need to have is, you know, and you teach young broadcasters is to have a vision, to have a plan, and to be able to navigate that, be flexible. Hockey was never in my plan, but that ended up being a part of my journey.
Well, I'm sure you had a knockout demo too. I mean, you're great at what you do, and I'm sure it was of NBA quality when you submitted it to the 76ers, and you're certainly a big part of the Sixers family now. You're a Philly guy. Let's put it this way. You're identified as a Philly guy, but let's be real. You're originally from the Midwest. Describe the metamorphosis that took place en route to you becoming, you'll pardon the expression, one of us.
Right. Well, our friend, it's funny, Sean Oleksiak, as you know, now a big executive with NBC Sports Philadelphia, traveled as your producer for, I believe, the first 13 years of my career. And he always used to tell me, in order to metamorphosis, I don't know what, you know, exactly that means, but I think evolving into being a Philly person, Sean used to tell me to eat Scrapple. I'm like, you know, I think I could probably pull this off without eating Scrapple. I've still yet to, I'm a big, you know, I love breakfast meats, but I've yet to eat Scrapple. But I think what might have happened is, you know, again, having been an athlete, albeit on a lower level, like, you know, small time college basketball, but in high school and whatnot, and growing up as an athlete, you know, we all have a competitive bug. And that at times, especially when we used to sit down on the court, and especially, you know, almost three decades ago when I still had a little I brought that to the broadcast, and that's Philly. And that wasn't me trying to meld into Philadelphia, that's Philly right there. Hardcore, tough. They want, and I kind of match, this is my thought, I matched the sentiment of what our fans were thinking. And that's a small part of it. And, you know, like we root for the home team. I always joke that I play the house organ, the company organ, you know, so you got to be objective and be a professional broadcaster. But at the same time, you know, you're around these teams, you know, our teams, the Sixers, so much, you're going to root for them a little bit. And I think that all comes out in a more organic, passionate way. So if that's my metamorphosis, there it is.
You mentioned, Tom, playing the house organ. You're obviously deeply connected with the 76ers, the radio stations. You're in the hotels, you travel on the charter plane, you see what's going on an intimate level. Tell me, how is it that you know the border or the parameters with which to conduct yourself while you're on the air? In other words, what to say and what not to say?
Well, I think a lot of that is just basic common sense and intuition. You know, like, and I still go to shooter on, particularly on the road, because I'm there with the team. And, you know, I find at my core, I'm a reporter, an observer. And I still, like, every now and then, I might pass along a nugget that, like, a week or so ago, we were in Orlando, and Coach mentioned this, but they triple teamed Joel. They put six or seven players on the scout team, like, with the development coaches. And that's what Embiid faces, like, with the double teams around that top of the key area. That's a worthwhile, you know, in part. But I didn't share what Joel talked about on the bus going back to the hotel after the game, that kind of thing. Like, so you just sort of know. And the big thing, too, is the game, the description of the game takes up enough time. You know what I mean? I can get in enough color and all that. There's enough story material and content, if you will, in addition to the live call of the game. So you don't want to ever swerve too far away from that, because that's the number one priority, particularly on radio. But I would go back to what I said, having been around, and I never want to, like, I don't know, the phrase embedded, or I never want to overstep my bounds with the guy. I'm in their world. Yes, I work for the Philadelphia 76ers, but it's their team. It's the coaches. It's their culture. Like, that's a big thing. Like, for me to sit in on a practice, I never take that for granted, ever. And I love basketball. I love watching Nick Nurse coach. You know what I mean? Like, the competition, basketball, being around the sport, that's like one of the biggest drivers for me. And I would never do anything, you know, I would hope to ever get close to, you know, making a wrong choice on that front. Because I want those guys to look at me and smile. Like, I tell them good luck or good game, but I don't really, you know, like, converse. And now there's a big separator in age. But it's their team. I want them to look at me and, oh, that's that guy. There's that radio guy. You know, that's fine for me.
Yeah, I want your view of the current team. We're going to talk more about that. Certainly its chances of winning a championship. And Nick Nurse, who I just think has done a terrific job for so many reasons, not the least of which is where he positions Embiid on the floor. But the fact that you work by yourself, when I talk to people on the street, that's one of the things that they mention first. And he does it all by himself. Having spent a lot of time, Tom, in your company, I've told you this, I love the way you analyze a game. How much does it help that you can talk to yourself and answer yourself at the same time?
Yeah, and I kind of look at it a little bit like as an analyst. I go back to the late, great Jack Ramsey, one of the classiest guys we've ever had in Philadelphia and in our sport. And Dr. Jack, of course, St. Joe's, the Sixers, champion with the Blazers. But he also called games for not only the Miami Heat on TV, but he was the analyst with Jim Durham at the really, really when NBA radio started at the very beginning. And Dr. Jack used to just, you know, get in there real quick, but he obviously was so knowledgeable. That's kind of the pattern or what I'm thinking of what you would say. I mean, we've all watched literally thousands and thousands of games, whether it's football or whatever, baseball, basketball, and we've heard the expert analysis, and those guys are experts. Like, for example, Ala, they played. You know, they're more expert than they might even realize because they played. And again, just a little bit of athlete's mindset helps me. So I want to get that in there real quick, just like your analysts would, like as you describe the play, you give the score, boom, they step in for 7 or 8 seconds on the radio and say exactly what occurred. It's that whole, the why and the whatever that, you know, that's kind of what I try to do. So, but the big thing is I've done it for so long. I mentioned the minor league experience. I did all those games by myself. I did hockey by myself. And I totally understand the repartee and the give and take of two analysts. And that, because it is, after all, entertainment. So there's no doubt that we miss, the Sixers broadcast misses that a little bit. But I, again, I go back to how much stimuli out on the court with 10 players and 3 referees and 2 teams and 20,000 fans and everything that you kind of have to get in. It's never, somebody approached me at halftime last night and asked that same question. I think it's a little bit of a bigger deal just because we're in a market the size of Philadelphia. But honestly, there's not one time I'm not saying there's not one time I don't think of what I'm going to say, because we all do that, certainly coming out of a break and like that. But to where, what am I going to fill the time with? Now, I have a producer's brain because I'm filling 2.5 hours every single night. So like I said, those things are part and parcel. But I just mean, like, it's none of it's a search, because in the end, and this is a television rule, maybe it's in your textbook, but it's like the CSAY rule. And that is, if you see something, you know, it sounds like we're warning people on the train, but what I'm saying is, like, you describe what you're seeing. So if there's a review, those are the things that take a long time. Those are the scenarios where really an analyst might be helpful, because you could go over, is it a flagrant foul? What are they reviewing? Because there's so many triggers, as we call them, in the NBA right now. But if nothing else, I know who's in the replay booth. I know who's, you know, in Secaucus. I know who's refereeing the game. I'm getting to watch the replays. And for somebody listening on the radio, I'm describing the scene as we await whatever is being determined in by this example, a coach's challenge. So I understand that it's the me, myself, and I network when it comes to that. But it's never been a stretch. And I think in part because, like I said, I did hundreds of games solo in years past.
Mac, again, having spent a lot of time in your company, you're an amazing raconteur. Your ability to tell a story is amazing. I want you to tell one story. Go back to the CBA, because the minor leagues always seems to be where the weirdest stuff happens. And I'm going to time it to 60 seconds, because I know you can go 60 minutes with a story and be entertaining for every minute. But give me a 60-second weirdest or wildest thing you experienced in your 4 years in a minor league Continental Basketball Association doing play-by-play.
Well, all right, because I like to summarize, and it's the experience and all that. But in one instance, the team's name was the La Crosse Catbirds. We played in Birmingham, Alabama. And you'll remember the name, Jim Farmer, a former Alabama basketball player.
Oh, you're playing a game in Birmingham? Your home games weren't there. You're playing a game.
La Crosse was on the road. We were playing a game.
Got it. Okay,
in the
fine.
CBA.
Go ahead.
And this is circa 1990, 91, something like that. I think it might have been 92, because we won the championship. And it was an NBA referee that worked in the NBA, hence, you know. But at the time, he made a call, and he called an offensive foul, and they shot free throws. And as you know, that just, you go the other way. That's not a shooting situation. But, and our coach was the late Flip Saunders, and he was really trying to get his attention. Like, what are we doing shooting these free throws? So Birmingham made the free throws, and we ended up losing the game. Well, we protested. And, you know, like, we all remember, like, from Little League Bay, we're going to write Williamsport. We're protesting this game. We don't ever lose. And, you know, we protested. And these coaches, Eric Musselman, the Arkansas coach right now, he was in Rapid City. There's a number of guys. And they went all – Jim Tooley with USA Basketball today and for decades. Jim was the referee. He was the head of operations. Those guys were on the phone with Jim Tooley after the game every night. So – but the protests – actually worked, because we were, and this is why, we were going to play Birmingham again. So when we go down there, they replay the final, whatever, 220 of the game. without the free throws, and Birmingham brings the ball up. Well, we win the game on a bank shot from the hash mark by Jaren Jackson, right? Wow. Jaren Jackson Jr.'s dad. He played with the Sixers out of Georgetown from New Orleans. He was a champion with the Spurs. JJ hits a shot from the hash mark, banks in a three, and we win the game. And then we got to play the real game. And as you recall, the CBA had a scoring system, a point system. Like you got a point for winning the quarter. So a game was actually worth 7 points. And like if you won the game, it was worth three. So the four quarters and the 3 points. And that's how the standings were doing. I'm sure that was almost like how the NBA experiments that. Well, now the second game comes up. And in a sense, you're like, no way we're winning this game. You know, like with all due respect to the officials, but we just got a W from the ashes of a loss. And we went out and won the second game. So we won two games in one day because of the game wasn't administered right with the foul call. And then like the protests and whatnot, that right there. And then the way it ended with Jackson hitting his shot. There is so many stories like me sitting on the luggage. And that's probably what you really wanted to hear. But it was, again, I've always said it sounds nostalgic and I don't know if romantic is the right word. Because in a way, I graduated to the NBA. It was it was minor league in a lot of departments. But if I didn't do it, I'd probably say, that was such a minor league sit. But because, you know, we stay at the Four Seasons now, and as you say, we travel on private planes and the world of the cocoon, if you will, of the NBA, it sounds a lot, they're real, but it sounds a lot more homey or, back in the day kind of deal about the minor league.
I think that's a podcast itself, just hearing some of your stories, but we got to roll on here. It's our halftime segment. I'm going to ask you again about the current team, Allen Iverson. I even want your Eagles take, if we have time for that, and the future of our business. I'm sure you have an opinion on that. Where is sportscasting going? But first, it's our halftime segment. First, we have the six pack. Okay. So I'm going to have you choose between two things. Our six pack, by the way, is brought to you by Garage Beer Six Pack of Questions. Garage beer, flavored beer, find some near you at garagebeer.com. And then I'm going to go to my Apple Music collection, and I'm going to give you a handful of artists, and you tell me if you have them in your collection or not. So are you ready for our six-pack?
I am. I have about an 18-pack right now, but I get you. And I don't mean a beer.
Here we go.
So, you ever get to a game and your view's nothing close to what you thought it would be? Listen, I get to buy seats now too, no freebies, so I'm teaming up with Game Time. They have got killer last-minute deals, flash deals. You could check out views from all seats in the venue, and they've got your back with the lowest price guarantee. Listen, if you find tickets for less in the same section and row, Game Time credits you 110% of the difference. They show your total up front. No surprises at checkout. Buying tickets takes 2 seconds, a couple of taps, and you're done. Philly, let's change the game. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the app, create an account, use the code ZOO for $20 off your first purchase. Remember, terms apply. Redeem the code ZOO, Z-O-O, for your $20 discount at GameTime.co.
I want you to choose between these two things, Philly cheesesteak or Philly soft pretzel.
Cheesesteak, all day, twice on Sunday.
Center City or South Jersey?
Ooh. South Jersey.
Of course. Gritty or Philly fanatic?
The fanatic.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Oh, that's a great one. Hall & Oates.
Dr. J or Allen Iverson throwback jersey?
AI.
Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Liberty Bell. I'm a history guy, so you know that.
Of course, of course. We're going to my music library. I'm going to give you a handful of artists. You tell me if you have them or not. Are you ready?
Yes.
Boston.
Yes. More than a feeling. Yes.
Lady Antebellum.
Yes.
Foo Fighters.
No.
Dave Matthews Band.
No.
Kyle Eastwood.
Never heard of him. Is it a guy?
Well, you've heard of his daddy.
Okay. Clint?
Yeah.
Saw him. Rob and I saw him on our honeymoon in Carmel. But go ahead. He had a light purple jacket.
At the Hog's Breath Inn?
No, that had gone by. It was on this they saved this one property right on the cove. It was, yeah, there he was.
Was he the mayor then? Wasn't he the mayor?
No, it was after. It was like Saturday afternoon. Again, this is our honeymoon, as you know, was right after 9/11. And so we were in Carmel after a nap and everything. And Robin and I were there having, this is 2001, obviously. And he walked in on a Saturday. And it was great. And Robin was very cool about it. But when we get in the car, she was so excited. She called his mom and everything. And yeah, 6'3", like I said, he had a light purple jacket on. And he had saved this property that was going to turn into, he and a bunch of others, into a residential or, you know, like real estate development. And, oh, my, the view, the setting was just awesome. Mm-hmm. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, it's an amazing part of the country. The current edition of the 76ers, how far can this team go? Can they get past the second round?
That's everybody wants to know. It's funny because Coach Nurse, when he got here, and he had so much to do once he got here and, you know, establishing the culture and hiring people. And, you know, he had a sense around our organization. Oh, the second round. Well, this is a guy that won the championship. He's like, what is the deal with this? I don't even think of the second round. But based on our experience and the Boston Celtics, you have to think about the second round. And to the first part of your question, can the Sixers get to the championship and win the championship? The answer is yes. The route and the path and how it will go is obviously to be determined. But they've proven they can beat the best teams. But Milwaukee, Miami, who knows? We got smoked by the New York Knicks earlier this year, like, and Boston. We've still, have one game left with the Celtics, but they're obviously the cream of the crop. They haven't lost at home. And so everything would have to fall the right way. But, you know, to me, it's with Boston, how are you going to guard Tatum and Brown? And they, the other, like a week ago, Zoo, they had a game where they made 24 threes, and you look down and Porzingis had 4, and Derek White had 3, and Tatum and Brown each had 4, and Pritchard had 3 off the bench, and Drew missed 3 but made 1 or 2, you know, that they're very good. But, you know, at some point we've got to knock them out, right? But there's no doubt about it. The Sixers have an opportunity, but we'll see. It's a long road. Like our coaching staff works on today, and we're getting ready for a long road trip, but they also work on down the road. They're trying to put things in, schemes and teaching that are not just about this week's games, but are about what's going to come down the road. Because, you know, in playoff games, you have to adjust on the fly and make changes. And your guys have to be, you know, you try not to have it be brand new. It's something that we tinkered with. Coach Nurse calls it a toolbox, going back into the toolbox. And the last thing I'll say, and it ties into title hopes, when Daryl Morey hired Coach Nurse and he came in, and again, 5 years in Toronto, won the championship in 2019, and won a championship so many different places, has finished as the winner a number of places. You asked about the CBA. That would really be my memory. We won the title 1 year. And I don't care if it's Class A baseball or minor league hockey or the CBA or the G League or British basketball. You win the championship, you won your league. You set out what you went to accomplish. He's done that. He's felt that a number of times, including in the NBA. And my comparison is when you get a player via trade, and you've said this a million times, your own stuff, you guys should meet the new guy. And when you get that guy in your gym, the coaches always say this, oh, I didn't know this about him, because, you know, you see a guy every day and, you know, you meet his person, his character, and then all of the things that he brings to the table and some things that you didn't realize when you watched him from afar in a competing team. Same thing with Nick Nurse. When I watch him coach, and I just went over with him last night because Popovich was in town, all of the gamut, the skill sets that a coach needs at this level is just, you know, it's like 30 things. And one of them is having a vision and sensing and knowing what your culture is going to be, but hiring the right people. You can't do it by yourself. And the X's and O's and the teaching. And he's got it all. He's amazing. He's very intelligent, extremely smart. And the big number one thing is having the respect of your players. And when your players know that you can help them get better and improve their stake as a pro athlete and down the line, their fortunes and whatnot, their finance, but also to be, you know, a better player, a better winner, and collectively make a team, a championship team. That's buy-in. That's buy-in. And Nick Nurse is one of those guys. He's got that.
You and I had the opportunity to share plane rides, hotels, and of course, we're courtside for an amazing era in Sixers basketball. That would be the Allen Iverson era. If you can encapsulate the feeling, what it was like for you, especially in 2001, that crazy, amazing ride, what it was like for you to broadcast those games?
Well, that was awesome, you know, and part of it is that in the end, with the television deal, where guys like yourself and the local television broadcast has to call it a year so that the focus can be to the network partners, the local radio becomes, you know, like the only local broadcast. And we've had that for around during the past few seasons. But that year we had whatever it was, 22 games. And the intensity of the playoffs, one of my favorite stories is somebody told me a story like, you know, I used to play all those golf outings. I don't do as many now, but in the area for charities, mostly on Mondays or whatever. And, you know, I loved it. You met so many different people and you went to different places around the region. You got to play golf. You know how it goes, Zoo. They're thanking you like, really? Because you're providing me with a pretty neat experience too. But it was a young golfer, you know, when I say young businessman in his 30s, and he was explaining the Toronto, this is the 2001 series, Sixers-Raptors conference semifinals, and they had some function like a baptism on a Sunday afternoon, and the game was being played in Toronto, and the guy was ticked off at his wife because he started listening to the game, and he felt like he missed a major chunk of the game, and then I finally said the score, and it was like 6-4. He hadn't missed anything, but I was raring to go, you know, 3 minutes into the game. So that's the kind of intensity that the playoffs, you know, bring out of you, if you will. So, and as you know, we were kind of in a tunnel. You get into a tunnel of airplane, hotel, travel, game the next day. And that's the one beauty of our, not the one beauty, but that's a really neat thing about our job. And in a way, and I don't want to make this sound too hoity-toity or dramatic, but it's like a performance, and it relates in this way to this particular angle. And that is, you can build up and build back down and then build back up again. In other words, you know that our game is at 7 o'clock. Okay. And then you do all your preparation and all the mental preparation. You know, I remember this from my high school football days of going through the plays and going through the actions before the game. And then when they occurred, it was almost like, wait a minute, that's exactly what I've walked through. I do the same thing today all the time about even going to the arena and all the different things that you may encounter while there. So you don't get detracted or you embrace, I might get to see so-and-so, you know, simple stuff. But that's what, you know, and then you wind down and then you do it again. And that's what the playoffs are, because it's an almost every other day thing. So that was so cool. And my favorite moment there is when the Sixers won the Eastern Conference Championship beating Milwaukee, and we were at the center. And
we're going to Tinseltown.
Yeah. And again, those things just come out organically. You don't script that. But
I love
that. The local television stations weren't interviewing Coach Brown or Allen. Those guys had moved on. But I ended up doing live shots with like three of the local television stations, and the last of which was Robin on CBS3, Robin Rieger. And we were engaged to be wed. And by that time, it's 11 o'clock. And we went out. Their setup was outside the center with the building as a backdrop. And we did it straight down the line. That was really something special. And then we reflect back on, we'll have to at some point, I think, maybe show that to our kids. But then the next day we flew to Los Angeles. And as you know, Coach Brown liked to go over the tape. And he was a nervous flyer. So sometimes there was red wine on the flight. And I had the game too, like in the, you know, these are like first class seats and a little monitor there. And of all things, I'm drinking a half a glass of red wine on a travel day to Los Angeles, watching and knowing we're going to the NBA finals. That was like a magic carpet ride. But and it was awesome. The thing I don't caution, but getting to the championship is not winning the championship. Name me the team 5 years ago that was the runner-up in the Super Bowl, in the world. You don't know that. We know it because it was special and it was 22 years ago. And like you say, that was a team the city embraced. It was special. I'm not diminishing it. But the idea is to win the championship, right? And that, you know, you're getting there is a big part of it. Sometimes you get there and you get knocked back. But that's what that will be a moment for Philadelphia, like when the Phillies won the World Series and like when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. But that is certainly something. The practices at UCLA, being in Los Angeles, the first game where Allen, you know, is just off the charts, way too good, as I say. So all of that, I'll never forget. The Carter versus Iverson in the Toronto series, the Sixers finally beating Indiana, the Pacers and Reggie Miller had knocked them off 2 years in a row. That was a big piece to move on. And it was a team, like I said, the city embraced because it was a hard-working team. They were fun to watch compete. One of the coaches from another team used to always say, the skill your team has is its ability to work hard. They were a bunch of, you know, grinders. You've had a bunch of them on this podcast and around that star in Allen Iverson. So, and then Larry Brown, that, you know, as I said, I love watching coaches. Here's one of the best coaches in the history of sports. And, you know, like in this world of analytics, you saw how he got on the plane. He got on the plane with a book. He might have a James Patterson book in his hand. And it was all up here and in his gut. Like in this world of data analytics, here's one of the best coaches to ever do it. And he did it, you know, on experience and knowledge and genius. Like that was pretty cool as well.
I want to break down what it is that I did, what you still do. One of my greatest fears before I retired was saying something on the air that in a world that has become a lot more politically correct might be misinterpreted. In other words, you say something and the PC folks are up in arms because they think you may have meant something different.
Right.
Do you have any of those trepidations?
For sure. And especially because I talk so fast and do you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
And again,
yeah,
I mentioned
you're just flying.
Yeah, I mentioned the after the game and the building back up. Well, part of the after the game is kind of going over. I liken it to a great, like a gourmet meal with a bunch of friends and family. And you're like, oh my God, the appetizer was unbelievable. So I go back and kind of redress and the highs and the lows. Like, oh, I can't believe I said that. Or, oh, I botched that. And you asked about matching the moment of a game like Embiid scoring 70. Like, what if I would have fumbled a bunch of those, the 50 point, the 60 point, the 70 point? I didn't, but those are the kinds of things. So, you know, and you know, the great Hubie Brown used to give us broadcast, don't go anywhere. Like, don't talk about somebody's hair or religion. Like, and that was a generality, but it's true. Like, it's a good one to, you know, like Cole Anthony got a haircut the other day when the Sixers, I don't know when it was, but, you know, he wore long dreadlocks and the Sixers played Orlando and he had a shorter haircut. I kind of wanted to mention that because that's how we know Cole Anthony in the NBA, but I didn't, you know what I mean? So my point is you try to steer away from things, from areas that might just, again, you're the Sixers announcer, just call the game. And then I think, you know, we try to be glib or funny or, you know, have a shtick or whatever. Mm. Those are danger areas, right? Just call
that's
the game,
right.
Get off it
that's
and call
right.
the game. Like, so that's it. But there's no doubt that the cancel culture and, as you say, the people that are going to lay, you know, and in the end, I would hope that somebody like myself, somebody with your character and reputation, anything untoward would reveal itself. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not mm-hmm. that guy. And like a half a second or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and I'm going to counter and say this, that as much of a great reputation as you might have, the minute you stumble,
I got you.
It all comes crashing down.
No,
we've seen
I got
that
you.
With,
I got
with
you.
A number of our colleagues.
No, I got you. And I get it. They don't go back, but he was an altar boy when he was 12. That should comfort.
Right.
I totally understand. But yeah, so no, it's no, there's no doubt. And now I'm going to do the next game like this. The Sixers have the ball. Indiana is on defense. But no, there's no doubt about it. But I think, again, you can't be so encumbered that you worry about it. You know, you got to be able to flow and describe the game and just come from a true spirit of being a good person and not going there and not bringing up, you know, certain elements or whatever and just steering clear for all the right reasons. And just like I said, not being so tongue-tied that you're so worried that you can't really show passion and be intense And again, be entertaining and try to bring some light to the ball game that you're describing.
Tommy, you are still very much on top of your game. You got a lot of broadcasting left in you. Long may you wave. You may not even want to remotely think about answering this question. And you know where I'm going.
I don't.
How long do you ever sit and, you know, you're sitting there with Rob and you're on the beach and right. you're kind of liking, you know, the environment and, hey, maybe we can do this year round. Do you ever think about how much longer you might want to do
well,
this?
Well, I'll be honest, guys like yourself and J.R. Aquila, our friend that just stepped away as the director, the producer of Sixers basketball. I'd never been around people that had retired. You know what I mean? Like I'd never given a thought. And I go back to like a financial planner. When you're 30, they're like, what's your number? I'm like, what's my number? My phone number? And they're asking you what you need to retire. Like, I don't know. I just want to save some money. I want some compound interest is what I want. No, you know what I mean? Like, so it never occurred to me. But now I'm over 60. And now, like you say, and we do sit on the beach. That's part of it. That's why I voted for South Jersey. But then September rolls around and it's time to go back to work, you know? So you want to apply your craft. You want to go back and earn your keep, so to speak. And you want to be back around the team and be around basketball. That's my job. So that kind of, like the summer is great and I love it. And I love being with our family and we love the beach. We've been there for over 20 years. For a kid from the Midwest that sits alongside and walks next to the ocean every day, I never take that for granted. Mm-hmm. But I also love what I do. And I love broadcasting, but I love being around the game. I've already kind of explained about the basketball. And like yesterday, like apparently Zoo, I made the paper. And they were talking about I was taking pictures of Wembanyama as well. Because as I've said, in Philadelphia, like we're going to go to the Walnut Street Theater tonight. You walk those halls, right? And not maybe in the last 20 or 30 years, but you go back 60, 50 years. The greatest American actors played the Walnut Street Theater. They cut their teeth in Philadelphia before making it to Broadway. The Academy of Music, you know, and now the Kimmel Center, they've hosted some of the greatest performers in the world, right? Pavarotti came here. The greatest Michael Jordan played the Spectrum. You called, you know, his 30,000th point. Some of those milestones were right here in Philadelphia. And so this young 7'4 talent from France came to Philadelphia last night. That's neat. And those are special. Those are different. Embiid had 70 points. Our team was won a number of playoffs. All that's great. And I love all that. But I call it being at the arena, being around the court, like being around the batting cage. That's basketball's version of hanging around the cage in baseball. And being around the people in our game, the scouts, the coaches, people you've met, you know, over the years. I enjoy that. And I love going to the game. The tough part is, and the things that, as I always say, I'm going to retire from 95 or the other, that 130 I take. I'm going to retire from that before I retire, you know, having to go to the game in snow and ice and whatnot. That or worrying about getting to the plane. That's what pushes me closer to thinking about wrapping it up. But I still love all of the things that are part of our job. And I can't, like Sean, again, referring back to Sean Oleksiak, making sure you know you're done. You're not going up those stairs at a plane. You make triple sure that's it. And I haven't sat there and, you know what I mean? Like, as you used to say, mm-hmm. you know, haven't lost anything off my fastball. I don't know, but I think you become better as a broadcaster with experience, just like anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another mm-hmm. baseball mm-hmm. reference, you get those at bats and you become better because you know how to communicate better and, you know, when to go and when to not and how to use your voice a little bit better in terms of communicating. So the answer is, I don't know. I'll go where you used to say this all the time. I'll stay as long as they'll have me is what I think now. But then there's health and family and what like that. But so far, so good. And I'll close with this. We just passed for this season, the 23-24 Sixers season, the halfway point. It was in Orlando, the 41st game. And somebody said to Coach Nurse, so this is the 41st game, like talking about a metric, like measuring your team. What do you know about your team? And he goes, is it? Wow. that went fast. And I thought to myself, fast? I'm on fumes. But it is a grind. There's no doubt about it. Like Brett Brown used to say, drip, drip, drip.
Yep.
It's not for everybody. This thing keeps going, but boy, it's a great life. And that's the part that I love. Like, and I don't mean going out because I don't go out. I go to churches and plays and stuff like that. And the Supreme Court, that's part of it too. Like you're traveling to the best cities in North America and you have all this time. And for me, you want to get out of the room and, be able to think. But at the same time, you got to be able to sit in your room and entertain yourself by reading or watching, whatever, television. Like, God knows, by the way, I'm the number one guy with the clicker. I've been voted for that for 15 years in a row. Like, because you got it, and you have to be kind of content by yourself a lot. And I know that sounds unusual, but think about it. Planes, buses, hotels, late nights, 4 hours sleep repetitively. Those things are that's the grind of the NBA. So there's your answer.
Tommy, I'll close with this. Let's hope before you call it a day, you get to say, and the Sixers have won the NBA championship. Tom McGinnis, long may you wave, my friend. I'm an avid listener. Thank you so much for being with us on Fresh 24.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll wave goodbye.
Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site. Covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.